In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
And thank you for joining us today here on the iSpy Radio Show, where every week we help you get a little more intelligence on big government. And there is perhaps no one area that demonstrates the ravenous hunger of big government to get bigger and bigger and to seize more power to itself than healthcare. Because healthcare has the two areas that big government hungers for the most, control and money. Why is that? Well, as we have said many times on this show, with a hat tipped Trevor Loudon, in a free market healthcare system, you're a patient, a customer. They have to demonstrate value and keep prices affordable to earn your business. But in a nationalized healthcare system, you, as an individual, are a liability. They will protect the system at the sacrifice of individuals. That's why the answer to most problems in nationalized healthcare systems is let the old and infirm people die. Yes, death panels are real. Inevitably, public health really just means public control, as in control the public. We saw that with COVID, didn't we? As for money, when Obamacare kicked in, the government seized control over one-sixth of the economy. Now, think of this. If the far left was able to bleed off literally hundreds of billions of dollars over decades for themselves from spending on global warming, how much do you think they could pay themselves by seizing control over one-sixth of the economy? Those hundreds of billions of global warming dollars? Pennies. In just 2 years, the federal government shelled out $4.5 trillion on COVID, of which $3.8 trillion has already been spent, on one disease with a survivability rate on average of 99.8%. They were dumping money by the truckloads into anything that was even remotely related to COVID, and we know that much of that was filling state coffers and expanding government control, especially the normalcy of control. Now, many people see government shutting down businesses not just as normal, but even necessary. Of course the government should have that power. They're protecting us. The issue of government trying to seize control and to grow itself under the guise of helping is nothing new. Back in the 1940s, when FDR was busily working to bring more and more elements of society under socialist control, especially the economy, economists like Friedrich Hayek defended the free market system. Hayek took the position that prices reflect the perceptions of large numbers of individuals within a market. Economic calculations cannot be reduced to a set of equations, he said, because the knowledge underlying such calculations is the sum of countless perceptions of individuals in the market. This is why free markets always succeed, and why centrally planned socialist or communist markets fail, where prices are at the whim and speculation of a few bureaucrats rather than millions of individuals all making buying and selling decisions. It's simple. Individuals want what's best for them. Bureaucrats want what's best for government. Does anyone remember when Obamacare was passed and when Oregon passed its own version of Obamacare on steroids? Does anyone remember the big selling point? Things were going to cost less. We would save money. But how's that working out? Are we saving money? How's the healthcare system itself? Is it better with all of that government control? And what can we look forward to if we don't fix this? Make no mistake, they are destroying the country. All that's missing is the announcement. I'd like to welcome Lisa Lettmeyer back to the show. She is the owner of HealthSource Northwest, an independent insurance agency. She specializes in navigating the complexities of the health insurance market for individuals, families, and business owners. Lisa, it is great to talk to you again.
Good to talk with you.
So it's been a while since we last talked. If you could remind our audience a little bit more about you and your company and what exactly you do.
So I'm what's known as an independent broker. I work with numerous different insurance carriers in the market here in Oregon and Southwest Washington, helping individuals and families secure either individual health insurance if they don't have employer-based coverage. Predominantly, I tend to spend most of my time on now is working with consumers as they transition into Medicare insurance, which is pretty, you know, can be somewhat overwhelming and confusing. And so my job is to explain the process of Medicare and how it works and then look at the insurance options that go above and beyond original Medicare.
Yeah, to say it's a little complicated is really understating it. It just seems like a giant quagmire. And also, some of your background, in case people don't remember, your background is really in accounting, especially in forecasting and budgets, right?
Yeah, so I worked my way up in an accounting career. My final position was a corporate-level development accountant, where my job was to work with the developers and talk about land deals and what we were going to do with it and taking it to completion, whether it was industrial space or retail, all the way through leasing it out. So when I was working with them as we were going through the projects, a lot of my job was, how are we doing on the money and what do we think is going to take us to complete it? So constantly budgeting and forecasting out into the future.
And so when we talk about problems in the healthcare system with you, I know that you're really looking at things from that perspective, especially so in terms of forecasting where this is all going to go and how much it's going to cost. And, you know, there are a lot of moving parts, all sort of scattering in different directions here in the healthcare system. So we're going to try to cover what we can today, but I know we'll never get through all of it. But in talking with you during our pre-interview, it just sounds like the whole of the healthcare system is just a colossal mess. What are your thoughts?
Yep. It's really, you know, I get asked all the time because, of course, for, you know, 17 years now, I've held an insurance license and I help people with insurance and Medicare. And I'm asked all the time, you know, why is it so expensive? What can we do to bring the cost down? And it's such a complicated, convoluted issue because there's not one thing. There's not even just three or five things. There is no quick fix. And a lot of what truly probably should be done and looked at isn't necessarily comfortable to talk about. It's long-term. It doesn't give us our immediate result, which Americans like that quick fix, you know, the easy button that, you know, right. And that's not what we're going to be facing. We really need to change how we think and what we do, and we need to go back to the kids and look at our education system.
Yeah. So just as kind of a general overall picture, give us your thoughts on where particularly things are really messy and perhaps getting worse.
I think most people would agree there's three big ones right now. Number one, because we hear about it in the news, we've got especially here in Oregon, we've got a limitation on our hospital beds. We're constantly being told, oh my gosh, we've only got so many hospital beds left in the state. So number one, the issue with our state is we actually sit at the lowest beds per capita in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And that shouldn't be something that we're looking forward, that we should want to be, right? We need to have appropriate amount of beds for the amount of people that we have living here in Oregon. And it's convoluted, and even I don't completely understand it, but there is some rules and regulations and kind of deterrence for building new hospitals or opening new beds. They're quite frankly ran by the state of Oregon and also the hospital systems that are here. So they kind of put a lock on things. So what the answer to that is, I'm not sure, but we certainly could do better. What's creating the strife on our capacity right now isn't COVID. There are some people in the hospitals with COVID, but a lot of the beds are being taken up by people who did not seek care or ongoing care that they were receiving before COVID. And so a lot of the issues that would have been caught ahead of time before things were at higher levels or being dealt with on a regular basis weren't. And so we've got exacerbated cases that are sitting in the hospital, which means they're there longer, it's more extreme, and then we can't just send them home. A lot of times we have to send them to move on to a rehab facility, 24-hour care facility, and those facilities are also full. A lot of that is staffing shortages.
Yeah.
That's one issue.
Before we get to the other two, we're going to need to take a break here. Everyone stay with us. We'll continue this with Lisa Lettmeyer. And coming up over the next four segments, we'll be looking at some of the various crises going on right now in healthcare. Stay with us.
Get a little more intelligence on big government.
And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. Talk today to Lisa Lettmeyer about what's going on with the healthcare system. A huge quagmire there, as you can imagine. She is the owner of HealthSource Northwest. That's healthsourcenw.com. If you want to go visit her, she will help you navigate the complexities of health insurance and Medicare insurance throughout Oregon and Southwest Washington. So, Lisa, we were going out of that last break when we still had two more of the major problems going on. So you want to continue your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so we've talked about the hospitalization. You know, we have struggles with that here in Oregon. Just the cost of somebody being in the hospital, that's a big push in our overall healthcare cost dollars. The other two, one is prescription drugs, and we've known that for many, many, many years. There's two sides to that, though. There's the cost of the drug itself and trying to find ways to not stamp down on the continual research for new medications that we may need, but at the same time, making them affordable for the population. But the other one is just the overutilization, right? So it's sad, given what I do for a living, which I'm helping people find plans, when I see a list of medications that somebody's taking, and over the years, as I assist them doing the reviews, that we start off with maybe one blood pressure med, one cholesterol med, and then after a time, now it's two or three blood pressure meds, or maybe the dosages go up. And then we've got cholesterol, and same thing. We start off with one, now maybe there's two, maybe the dosages go up. I see the exact same thing with depression and anxiety. And I just think that, you know, first and foremost, all of us, this is a personal thing of accountability, all of us need to figure out, you know, yes, there's some hereditary things that affect us, but can we do things different in our lifestyle, whether that's, you know, sleeping, eating, moving, just a lot of things to address stuff with lifestyle change before we get to medications. And if we have to go that route, let's do it as efficiently as we can.
Yeah.
I'm not a medical professional. That's just my opinion from seeing things for 17 years. And then the third one, I think, quite frankly, that's really pushing our healthcare costs.
I agree so much with you that drugs is a major situation right now. And it just seems like, as healthcare providers or the healthcare system in general, it just seems like we are constantly looking for the quick, easy fix, that somehow you just throw meds at the problem. You mentioned how, you know, they start out with blood pressure and then it leads to something else and then something else. And it's just this ongoing situation where they just keep throwing pills at people. And I almost think that's part of the larger problem with our perception of healthcare, is that we just think that there's these quick, easy fixes. And sometimes there's not.
Yeah. You know,
it does require some other lifestyle changes and whatnot. But within that, there was a recent Oregonian article that really pointed directly to prescription drug prices. It contributed to a 49% jump in Oregon healthcare costs over a six-year period. But also, just so people know, that 49% jump, that's 2.5 times if you figure just a simple 3% cost increase to keep pace with what used to be nominal inflation. 3% increase per year, that would have amounted to about 19.4% over 6 years. Here it is, 49%. So what are the other costs that are factoring into that besides drugs?
Well, it's the type of drugs. So I've gone to, you know, I'm constantly going to training events and seminars and stuff. And one of the growing classifications are these specialized medications, gene therapy. And so I've been at a presentation where they talk about, you know, a new drug treatment to cure, say, hepatitis or a blood disorder or a severe medical condition at birth can easily cost, you know, $50,000, $200,000. One case I was looking at was $1.5 million for a treatment. Now, what it's doing for that person and their lifestyle, whether it's curing them or giving them back some type of quality of life, it's hard to put a price tag on that, but there is a price tag. And
sure,
we've seen an uptick in those types of drugs, the gene therapies and those higher dosing costs. And that's, you know, we call them specialty drugs. That's what's kind of really in that number. And in addition, you know, if you think about it, I mentioned in our last segment, we were talking about, you know, how I see medications get added over the years and get, you know, more and more compiled. And I mentioned at the end of that depression and anxiety. I'm sure you have seen the commercials at night where I can't remember some of the drug names, but one in particular I'll remember seeing, you know, if you're on a current depression or anxiety med and it doesn't seem to be really working, let's talk about this drug. We can add it to that. So now we're going to stack mental health drugs. And, you know, as you listen to the side effects, one of them is can, you know, create suicidal thoughts and tendencies.
Wow.
So, you know, you look at this stuff and you think, okay, we're taking a medication to solve a problem. Is it solving it? Do we need to add more drugs just to tamp down those symptoms? In the meantime, did we cause another symptom in the body? I mean, we have to remember these are synthetics going into a body, and it doesn't react the same with every single person. And then who's prescribing those?
Mm-hmm.
I was just speaking with a client the other day who's been a clinical psychology nurse, and she's been a professor, and she even talked about this. You know, she feels that in the mental health profession, they should always start with counseling and addressing the issue, and that the medications are really the tool to help bring that person up temporarily to a level where the therapy and discussions can help. It shouldn't be, oh, I'm going to go to my primary care and they're going to throw me on a depression or anxiety med, having not had a discussion, any counseling, any ongoing counseling. It's just, well, you've got these symptoms, let's treat the symptom but not the problem. And that, in every aspect of our healthcare, and again, I'm going to preface this by saying I am not a medical professional, but when you are on the outside of that and you're the one helping people buy insurance plans to access the services, the medications, I have to see it. And again, because I'm a number-based person, I watch over time that it's just this ongoing and problem, and it's not a matter of, oh, I give you a pill, it fixes it, and you stop taking it. They just keep seeing, they seem to be taking more pills and or higher dosages to just keep tamping down the symptom,
yeah.
But you didn't address the problem.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, and that seems to be endemic right now within the whole of healthcare, is that they are constantly chasing symptoms rather than getting down to the root problem. Let's go ahead and take a break here. We will continue this with Lisa Lettmeyer. She is with HealthSourceNW.com. If you want to go visit her insurance agency, everyone stay with us. We'll continue talking about the crises in healthcare. And welcome back. Talking about the various crises going on right now within the healthcare system. Things are not getting better despite all the promises of politicians. Going back to Obamacare, but even longer before than that, we are talking today with Lisa Lettmeyer. She's the owner of HealthSource Northwest, an independent insurance agency. You can go visit that at healthsourcenw.com, and we'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com as well. And Lisa, just so much to unpack in that last segment, and we still got to get to the third big thing. But before we do, though, you were talking about these specialized medications and the gene therapies, some of them costing $1 million or more. And you know, when I hear things like gene therapy medications, that really makes me concerned, because I just think that we're tinkering with things that we barely understand. And when you look at things from a cost-benefit perspective, you really have to weigh that in terms of spending $1 million on something. But also, if we're tinkering with something we don't really understand and we're already at a situation where we're chasing symptoms, I can see where you may slightly solve one genetic problem, but now you've opened the door to three or four more things. And so it just sounds like this is going to make things worse, not better.
Well, and again, without having a medical background, it's hard for me to speak to that. Although in the news this week, that, and I can't even off the top of my head remember the name of the medication, but there's a medication that came out that was supposed to address and either stave off or solve the Alzheimer's issue. Big excitement around that. And now mm-hmm. I'm reading articles this week that the studies were not done correctly, that the images were false. We're tackling big problems. We do need to remember that, you know, if you go back to the 1800s, early 1900s, we didn't live as long as we do now. So it's great that we're now living longer, because we've got sanitation and we've got all kinds of other things that have literally just allowed us to live longer, you know, safer ways of doing things. But with that, we're human, and things break down. Our cells break down. Our joints break down. I know that for sure. I've gone through that myself. And so, you know, the bones, they don't get more dense. They get less dense. So how do you address that? So you've got scientists who are trying to tackle it, whether it's cancer or Alzheimer's or blood disorders, and that comes at a cost. And the other issue is, as we look at some of these medications or things that we're trying to solve, the biggest cost is you might be trying to solve something that only affects a very, very small percentage of the society.
Right.
But we don't want to minimize those people. It doesn't mean that, oh, because there's only a few people, we don't have to worry about it. We want to have good outcomes for everybody. But in doing that, and the cost of that research and the cost of bringing that drug to market, it's so high that for just those people to pay for it, is astronomical. So you then see that blending out. So we have to it's just the cost of the whole system in whole, mm-hmm. right? So you're bundling everything together, and then people scratch their head and say, why is medication cost so high? Well, there's a lot that goes into it.
It really seems to me, too, that as far as rolling out these medications, that we are not spending the time on these trials that we ought to be. It seems as though in times past, when they roll out a new medication, they thoroughly tested that, and they were also very quick to yank that off the market if they started having adverse effects. We just had these vaccines roll out. They did not finish the clinical trials before they pushed them out, and yet, and there seems to be, sadly, a real openness within the healthcare system to essentially turn the larger population into guinea pigs. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, this is getting very personal and very one-on-one, but for me personally, the latest vaccine for COVID, I had big concerns about that right from the get-go just because it came out so fast.
Yeah.
And as you just mentioned, to really vet something and bring it to market, you're testing it on different groups of people, whether that's male versus female, the age, pregnant, different nationalities respond. Our biologies are a little bit different, so we respond differently. And over time, right? Because that's the thing. You know, we've seen medications come out, and we don't necessarily see some of the really long-term side effects until we're 10, 15, 20 years into it. Or we don't see it on that mass. You know, if you're doing trials, yes, you're trying to do the best you can, but ultimately, until that drug is out there and used for a very long time, you don't really get a sense of any long-term issues. Normally, I read an article at one point that if, you know, for example, the vaccine, in the past, if they were trying something out and had gone through the trials and was putting it out there, if they started getting incidences where they assumed that the vaccine was causing a severe reaction or death, I think the number I read was like at 25, they pulled it from the market.
It's actually less than 20, yeah.
We've heard our MERS report has had a ton of stuff.
Yeah, it's 20 deaths and they would pull it. In fact, a lot of times there's even less than that, but they would pull it.
Right.
But that really speaks, I think, to a larger issue right now within the healthcare industry. And so much of it is coming from those that are regulating this. It's a real willingness to bend the rules. You know,
behind that?
Right, exactly.
Right.
And so, how many people are making money off of that?
Is it money driven?
Yep. That's where I was going with that.
So, to me, I always personally look at what is somebody's motivation, right? What's the cause and effect? And so, if something's being pushed and it doesn't seem like it's going down the normal channels that you would see, I ask myself, okay, is it money driven? Is it power driven? Is it both? You know, for example, COVID vaccine, it was a scary thing when it hit the world. The initial projections were really bad. Then they came back and said, you know, oh my gosh, you know, we overprojected. It's still going to be bad, but it's not going to be like we thought it was. And it was pretty clear, certainly within the first 3 to 4 months, it was targeting older individuals, people with certain compromised issues or comorbidities. And so that should have been maybe the focus when we did get to a vaccine, is to focus on that group specifically. And before we even got to the vaccine, what really should have been the absolute emphasis right up front, and I've read many articles and seen many interviews about this, is the treatment protocol. Let's first get treatment going right now, because what we have to deal with is right now. A vaccine takes time. And then when we get to the vaccine, let's target it for who we think. An example of that I'll give people is the pneumonia vaccine. It's a covered vaccine, like when I'm working with people that are older on a health plan or going on to Medicare, it's 100% covered typically in most plans. The thing is, you don't normally get the pneumonia vaccine until you're older. Same thing with the shingles vaccine.
Right.
So they've learned that there's, you know, we created these vaccines, we tested them, but we wait and give them to you when you're more in the age bracket of where you're at risk.
Yeah.
And COVID seems to be one of those that would have been a good place to start at minimum. Is let's not talk about giving it to kids. Let's focus on the target group.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking, is they've gone from giving it to older people that are compromised, and they're pushing it practically on newborns now. And I think that just goes along with that willingness to bend the rules. There's a lack of accountability because these drug manufacturers cannot be held responsible for the adverse effects. And that, I think, is the real slippery slope here, is if you think this is the last time these drug companies will have no liability for something, you're crazy. All right, we do need to take a break. We'll have more with Lisa Lettmeyer talking about the crises within the healthcare system. Stay with us. We're talking about the healthcare system and the crises in it. There seems to be no end of topics here, but we are talking with Lisa Lettmeyer, trying to nail down what we can. Lisa is the owner of HealthSource Northwest. That's an independent insurance agency, and you can find out more by heading to healthsourcenw.com, and we will link that up on iSpyRadio.com as well. Just look for today's show page. And Lisa, so we've been talking about the drug price problems. We need to move into the third one now. And so what is your thought on the third big problem right now facing the healthcare industry?
My thought is, we talked about hospital costs, we talked about medications, mental health crisis. And mental health crisis is another one that goes kind of off into so many different directions. As a society, for decades now, we've had this as an issue, a growing issue. There's lots of reasons for that. It's our society changing with social media and screen time and on the phone or on the computer, not really engaging one-on-one, but engaging over these, internet platforms, kids not understanding and getting good tools on how to socialize and communicate. And it just kind of kept growing. Mm-hmm. And then people's expectations. I mean, you can walk around in society and see this all the time. We are less forgiving. We expect things to be perfect in our way all the time. We don't have the ability to discuss and engage. And that creates this overall societal problem. And that's one aspect. And then you've got things such as, illegal drug use. And some of these medications, especially recently, the fentanyl problem that we've got, some of these medications are causing brain damage.
Yeah.
And that leads to other issues. And then you've got the prescribed medications. You know, again, going back to Big Pharma, we've got these amazing pain medications and muscle relaxers, and they're perfectly fine. They're not addictive. Turns out they were. And so here you are trying to treat somebody who's in pain. And let me assure you, having had personally joint pain and issues and many, many clients, family members, friends going through that, that's real. And it's life-altering. If you're walking around in chronic pain, you are not happy. You have no ability to communicate effectively, because that pain, depending on the level of it, is just all-encompassing, and it affects your personality and your engagement and your communication. So you give these people a pain med that was supposed to be safe and effective, and now it's not, and they're addictive. And so you've got that. So there's so many areas. I mentioned earlier that we just kind of keep lumping on the medications, especially for anxiety and depression, sleep aids. All of those are very, very common in our society. So we've already got this problem, and then here comes COVID.
Yeah.
And you tell us humans who are supposed to, by nature, socialize and engage and support, that we're all supposed to shelter in place, quit our jobs, not quit, but basically go home. We have no job to go to in many, many cases.
Yeah, or get laid off.
If you're a business owner, you were laid off. If you're a business owner, you literally had to close the doors of your business. That is your livelihood. Now, some people did okay because they could jump on their computer if they were white collar and keep going, but that's really, discrediting a whole group of people that didn't have that ability.
Mm-hmm.
If you were a waitress or a hospitality worker or a mechanic or a hairdresser or a nail technician, I mean, all those people had nothing to go to. So now you've put them in a state of not having a purpose in life. They have no money coming in. There's no end in sight as it kept going. So now it's uncertain. Us humans don't do well in uncertainty. We need to have known things. And then we seem to be surprised that it created this huge, massive problem. I mean, we've done studies on babies that are left in cribs and orphanages that don't get enough socialization and being picked up and hugged, and what that does to them, to their ability to grow both mentally and physically and emotionally. We've seen it with our elderly. We know that if you're elderly and people that are shut-ins or don't have a support system, what that does to them, not just mentally and emotionally, but physically. We know this, but yet we did it anyway. And then our youth is the biggest ones I feel that have been impacted. I'm working with healthcare providers who are deciding to retire sooner than they had planned, and I've been working with a lot of teachers and educators, professors who have decided to retire sooner than they planned because they're burnt out. And it's so hard to hear these stories of how things were before COVID, which wasn't great because we don't have, you know, kids behaving well in school and they're trying to teach these kids. But then you go to COVID. And these teachers, whether they were a first grade teacher or a high school teacher or trying to teach online, and now the kids are back in class and they're 2 full years behind in their social skills and their education. And these teachers, these professionals are just burnt out.
Sure.
And our kids suffered and they're depressed. I've seen it. My daughter is just turned 20. I'm around her friends. I watched this play out personally. I watched it play out professionally with my client base. So when you deal with this and the cost, you've got increased suicide rates, increased drug utilization, whether it be illegal or prescription drugs, and then you have the fallout from that. If you try to commit suicide, you're in the ER. If you are on medications that aren't working and have exacerbated things, you're in the ER. And once you're there, they can't just let you go until they stabilize you or move you to another facility. And again, our state has done a horrible job at making sure we have beds for people who either need to be rehabbing and coming off of either illegal or prescribed drugs, or just a safe place for somebody who is having a true mental break, whether it be socially caused and they're just, you know, situational, or they have extreme mental health disease, bipolarism, manic, schizophrenia. There's no place for these people to go, and so they're flooding to the hospital. The hospitals can't get them out, and if they do, if they at least get them to a point of stable, get them back on some meds, get things kind of calmed down, they release them. There's no follow-up. There's no place where these people are going. There's no groups. There's no checking in. And guess what happens? Shockingly, the cycle starts all over again, and where do they end back up? In our system. And on top of all of that, nobody talks about the real, you know, kind of saddest part of all this is not only are these people suffering and need help in all these different levels and capacities, but the people trying to help them are understaffed, you know, stressed themselves, and many times they're in danger.
Yeah.
Somebody who's having a mental break, either because it's a true mental health disorder, such as bipolarism or manic or schizophrenic, or again, situational, or because of drug overuse or abuse, they are lashing out verbally and physically to these healthcare workers. And now we're stressing out and putting in danger our healthcare workers who are retiring or leaving the business. If they're not old enough to retire, they're just getting out and going to a completely different industry because it's not safe.
Yeah, and I think that I think the staffing issue is certainly a major portion of this. In fact, let's go ahead and talk about that next. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Lisa Lettmeyer of Health Source Northwest.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.
And welcome back. We're talking about the quagmire that is healthcare right now. We're doing that with Lisa Lettmeyer. She's the owner of Health Source Northwest, an independent insurance agency. You're going to pay the same premium whether you buy through Lisa, go directly to the carrier, or purchase online. So if that's all the same price, why not go through Lisa? And you get detailed customer service to make sure you get the maximum protection in time of need, all at no additional cost to you. You can find out more by heading to healthsourcenw.com. We'll link that up on ispyradio.com as well. And so Lisa, you know, just listening, you know, replaying this in my head the last few segments, it is just such a quagmire. And you can really see how everything just sort of piles onto one another. You've got the drug problem, which is you know, continuing to cause multiple other problems, which then leads into more ones. You've got the hospital bed problems. You've got the staffing problems. You've got mental health issues, and it's just one giant quagmire. And so, as we start to try to maybe make a little bit more sense to this before we leave the mental health system, you know, I have to say that, you know, you're adding more people to the system, which of course is causing more costs for everyone to go up. You've got insurance though covering all sorts of things that it didn't used to cover, and but I also think with the whole drug treatments and everything else, we're really creating maybe some false expectations. Is that, you know, you've got an issue, here's a drug, we'll fix it, and instead it just makes things worse. And so, talk to us a little bit as we start leading into some other topics here, maybe about the staffing issues, because I think that's tied into so many aspects of this.
Yeah, and you know, I get a unique perspective. I love what I do for a living. I obviously like talking, and I like meeting people. And I get to meet with people who are retiring. And then one of the first things I ask is, well, what did you do for a living?
Mm-hmm.
And so I get all kinds of things back. And anytime I'm working with a healthcare provider or an educator, of course, I tend to ask a lot more questions. And I'm getting a sense, little piece by little piece, of these, you know, experiences, what they see, right? If they were running a clinic or working in a hospital or working in a pharmacy or trying to educate people to go into the healthcare system. So some recent things that I've heard, you know, before COVID, we've always had what we call traveling nurses. So if a doctor, or excuse me, not a doctor, if a hospital was needing help, somebody was out, there was an extra need, they could go through an agency and bring in nursing staff. And that was normal, and it was used when it was necessary. But COVID hit, and so you've got all kinds of problems with that. You've got the, you know, limited capacity because you've got to separate everybody in the and the PPE issues, and some people who couldn't come to work because they were sick, or, you know, once we got the vaccine, they didn't want to get the vaccine because they'd already had COVID. So you have all these huge staffing issues that got exacerbated with COVID. And one of the ones I've heard a lot about is the traveling nurses. And so what you have is a situation where a hospital can't get enough staff in to staff the beds, and that means they've got to close that bed. And so to solve that, they'll go through an agency and they'll hire a traveling nurse. That nurse will come in, and typically they'll be making twice, sometimes even more than their normal wage that they would have at a hospital. For them, it's a good deal. If they have to travel to that location, they're given a per diem. So they're making more on salary. They're getting a per diem for their living expense. And as one of my friends who's doing this said, she doesn't have to worry about all the extra meetings, you know, the staffing meetings and the politics. She might get hired for 2 months. She gets paid X, she gets her per diem, and she goes in, she does her job, and she goes home. She's not part of the politics and the meetings and all the other stuff that she had been before. So she's happy. But the agency that the hospital went through isn't just paying the inflated rate for her and the traveling costs, they're paying the agency.
Right.
So there's an overhead for, you know. So that's an example of some of the extra costs that are going into our system right now. Again, I was meeting with a client, and she's a retiring professor in nursing program. Her background is a clinical psychiatric nurse, and she just happened to see an ad that was placed for our state hospital, and they were the ad was running, I think she said it was like $9,600 a month salary with a $7,000 signing bonus. So almost $10,000 a month to be a nurse at the state hospital with a $7,000 signing bonus. For her comment was, I wouldn't do it even if I was in my prime, because the incidences of people getting hurt, staff getting hurt at that hospital because of the mental health crisis and how bad it's gotten, how aggressive who's coming in the door and really where that status is at, is so bad that even at $10,000 a month, it wouldn't be worth it.
Mm.
To her. That was her comment. On top of all of that, and this is affecting every single industry, not just health, but health, we're going to feel it more, is the Great Retirement. We are right now in the middle point of our baby boomers turning 65. Baby boomers are people that were born between 1946 to 1964, and we've seen that group of people, as they've gotten older year after year, and decade after decade, how they've affected what happens in our society, right? So whether you're talking about Gerber foods or disposable diapers or fast cars and drive-thrus and all of this stuff. But here's what should have been being focused on. We knew it was coming. There's a massive group of people, baby boomers, who are at the top of their game, whatever profession they are, doctors, nurses, educators, police officers, fire, you know, carpentry, plumbing, electricians, all of it. And they're getting ready to retire.
Mm.
So, you know, you think kind of in terms of retirement at age 65, a lot of people will tend to work past that. And that was the norm. But I saw during COVID that a lot more people, I actually got busier during COVID because, quite frankly, many of my clients that I ended up helping had planned on working beyond 65 for, you know, 3, 5, 7, 8 years. And they were like, nope, I'm out. With whatever it was that was causing the issues, but especially in healthcare and again, the educators. And so now you've got these people with this huge depth of experience, and they're leaving. And we don't have the kids behind them ready to take over. And even the ones that we have, they don't have the same depth of experience. And many times, let's be frank, not trying to discredit that younger group, but they don't have the same ability to communicate.
No.
Or engage.
No.
And that's not necessarily their fault. They weren't brought up with it because it's all been, you know, cell phones and texting. But we need to remember that we're human and we need to be talking and engaging. Yeah. And that's how we have to think. So you've got
there's just been so many societal changes. It's just really hard to get your head around. Okay, we are up against the clock. Everyone stay with us. We will have more with Lisa Lettmeyer. We'll actually be having her back next week because that we have just barely scratched the surface. But for now, we'll wrap things up in our next segment. Stay with us. And welcome back in our final segment now with Lisa Lettmeyer, although it's not really our last segment because this is going to roll over into part two. There's just been so much to unpack here. And, you know, Lisa, again, just rolling things over in my mind here, just listening to all of how everything just sort of piles onto one another. You got staffing problems leading to issues that causing increased costs. You've got the mental health situation. You got drugs and everything else that just rolls into a giant mess. And you look at that and you think, okay, so of course we can solve it with more governmental control, which of course is what got us into this mess to begin with. But aside from that, it just really seems like, well, in particular, you were talking about the mental health issues. It just seems like we no longer want to say no to people. Instead of saying, no, you shouldn't be using those drugs, we indulge them. And, you know, we just decriminalized here in Oregon some of these harder drugs that now it's no longer a felony. They won't even arrest you most times now because of these new laws. And it just seems like anything goes now, the permissiveness of society. The new norm is that there are no norms. So as far as fixing healthcare, do we need to fix society first?
Yes. And that's a big nut to crack,
mm-hmm.
And it's a long-term nut. You're not going to see the benefits for 15 to 20 years minimum.
Or longer.
But there's no way... I don't think, and again, I'm not a medical provider. I don't run an insurance company. I just help sell insurance, the plans. But from my perspective, and again, having a numbers background and then seeing all of this play out for 17 years, asking tons of questions, talking to lots of different people, every little aspect that we look at, there's so many things that goes into each one of them. But at the end of the day, a lot of them are societal. You know, really, whether we're talking about personal accountability, we're talking about boundaries, we're talking about being realistic on what you expect the outcome to be. We, here in the U.S., if we don't get what we want or don't get the outcome we want, we immediately want to sue, which, by the way, just costs more money for the whole system.
Sure.
And just because something doesn't go perfectly for you or you know, this shouldn't equate to a payday, right? Like, we're not going to pay you $50 million because something didn't go well when you were only going to ever make in your lifetime, you know, $5 million, right? I mean, like, we need to look at things like that. So that's tort reform, personal accountability, being realistic. We are talking about medical science. So whether we're talking about medications or procedures or services, again, this is still a science. And as we develop new things, that's great. But as humans are evolving, we react differently from one person to the next. We could react differently if as a female. I could have one perfectly normal pregnancy and the other one be complicated. And I'm the same human having both pregnancies. So, you know, there's a lot that goes into that. How we engage with people, how we socialize, how we educate. Let's go back and look at the schools and the expectations of why are you going to school? You're going to school to learn the basics. With regards to reading, math, and science, history, so that we don't repeat the same mistakes we've made in the past. And that's the core. And along the way, you learn how to sit for X amount of time and to socialize properly, to raise your hand or not over-talk people, to listen first and then ask questions. and to work in groups, solve problems, and to increase your knowledge base, but also learn how to be socially acceptable, to work together, and to understand that it's not just you, it's everybody at the table. And then there's boundaries, and if you break those boundaries or break a rule, there's a consequence.
Mm-hmm.
And not everybody wins, right? Let's stop with the participation trophies.
Right.
And then when we talk about college and higher education, let's not just focus on that. We've got to get kids excited about not just college for a career, but how about a trade school for a career? Or maybe the military is your path, or maybe something else. But let's help discuss, there's a difference between a job and a career. And what are you going to do to go towards a career? What skill sets do you need? If you're going into that particular line, what other things could you do with that? And let's look at classes where we engage kids starting in middle school and bring more of those education pieces into the school, and get them excited then. And it's not all just about college, and it certainly isn't all about a liberal arts degree, right? So, there's so many things that we could do with our society.
Yeah, there really is, and there's so much more to talk about. Just one thing I think we're going to focus on next week is you were talking there about the money aspects and that people are expecting payouts. I think that's the other thing, too, to look at is when you look at big pharma, there is just so much money to be made. They're more than happy to have people go through adverse effects because it's simple. It's a lot easier and cheaper to just simply pay them a couple $1 million where you could be making tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars. So this is going to be a fascinating discussion. We're going to continue this next week with Lisa Lettmeyer. She is with HealthSource Northwest. You can find that at healthsourcenw.com. Lisa, thank you so much for time, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, Mark.
You know, listening to Lisa today, combined with what else is out there in the news, it's pretty clear those in charge don't have a clue what they are doing. Other than stealing money from taxpayers, that's their true expertise. But healthcare is a mess, the economy is a mess. Their one accomplishment this week, they changed the definition of the word recession from 2 quarters of negative growth to we're only in a recession when the left says we're in a recession. Doesn't that just make it all better? Do be sure to join us next week as we continue to dig in further into the problems and what is happening, but we'll also look deeper into the root causes, as well as what we need to do to start pulling us back from the brink. It's why we need people in office and in charge who have actually fixed problems rather than what we have now, people who are experts at causing them. Which is why we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.